Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Just a few days ago, the press and the pundits had declared the campaign dead. And we're told, well, when he got to Super Tuesday, it'd be over. Well, it may be over for the other guy.
It may be over for the other guy. The other guy, of course, being Bernie Sanders, for whom Super Tuesday was not so super. So, welcome to the always super podcast that is Deconstructed. I'm Mehdi Hassan. What a night it was on Tuesday, where Joe Biden took the lead in the Democratic primary race and took back his frontrunner spot from fellow septuagenarian Bernie Sanders. It's now a two-horse race.
We have to figure out how to build the progressive campaign that can win delegates next week, particularly in Michigan and Washington, and then going forward in Illinois, Florida, and the other key states.
That's my guest today, Larry Cohen, chair of the pro-Sanders group Our Revolution and a former campaign advisor to Bernie back during the 2016 election. I'm also joined by The Intercept's DC bureau chief Ryan Grimm to chew the fat and deconstruct all the results. How bad were they for Bernie? What happens next? And is Joe Biden, really the safe option to take on Trump in November?
It was, in a word, shocking.
Former Vice President Joe Biden making a remarkable political comeback from the brink.
Joe-mentum is real tonight, so we've established that.
This is the most blindingly fast political comeback at the presidential level that I've seen in my lifetime.
What a turnaround. Joe Biden, declared politically dead and buried by many of us just last week, is now the frontrunner again in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. He won 10 states to Bernie Sanders' 4 on Super Tuesday, and now leads in both the popular vote and the number of pledged delegates. On the one hand, an amazing change of fortunes, a comeback, if you will. He won Texas, which many thought Sanders had in the bag. He won blowout victories, not just in places like Alabama, but also in the swing state of Virginia, where he was outspent by Michael Bloomberg and outorganized by Bernie Sanders. On the other hand, though, as I often say on this show, context matters. This is the guy who was the front runner for much of the past year. He's the former vice president of the United States. He was leading in Texas until just a couple of weeks ago. And the only reason he had to pull off a comeback in the first place is because he performed disastrously in the first few contests, coming fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire. But he's now back in the lead. Though it's a narrow lead in terms of delegates, Bernie Sanders is still in this, and it would be as mad to write him off this week as it was to write off Biden last week. But here's a question that may affect things. What will Elizabeth Warren do now? She was humiliated in her home state of Massachusetts, coming third, behind Biden, who won it, and Bernie, who came second. What's her plan now? We don't know. By the time you listen to the show, she may have dropped out and endorsed Bernie Sanders. Or, God help us all, Joe Biden. I think if she does endorse Biden, someone she's been politically opposed to for so long, it will destroy her progressive legacy. This is a moment of truth for her and what she stands for. But let me say two things about Warren. Number one, it's wrong for some Bernie supporters to blame her for the disappointing results on Tuesday. It's not Warren's fault that so many African-American voters went for Biden over Bernie. And if you're going to argue that Bernie was undermined by her presence in the race, then you also have to acknowledge that Biden was undermined by Bloomberg's presence in the race. And number two, Warren did a major service in this 2020 race by almost single-handedly taking down Michael Bloomberg's oligarchic attempt to buy the presidency. And we should be eternally grateful to her for that.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
A quick word on Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg and all of you have something in common. None of us won a state on Super Tuesday. The difference is that you and I didn't spend $500 million trying and failing to win a state on Super Tuesday. To be fair to the billionaire from New York, he did pick up 5 delegates in the tiny US territory of American Samoa, which means he spent around $100 million per delegate. As Axios put it, never has a candidate spent so much for so little in return. $500 million is only a little bit less than the entire GDP of American Samoa, which apparently is based around tuna canning, FYI. Seriously though, what a criminal waste of money. As I said to his fellow failed billionaire candidate Tom Steyer on this show just a few weeks ago, he might as well have just piled up his cash in his backyard and set it all on fire. Imagine how many kids with cancer in the US he could have helped with that money. Or kids with malaria in sub-Saharan Africa. How many schools he could have built. He could have single-handedly fixed the water problem in Flint with that money. Or invested it in key Senate races that the Democrats need to win in November. $500 million! Anyways, rant over. Back to Biden versus Bernie. Personally, I do not get why so many Democrats have bought into this idea that Biden, Joe Biden, is the electable one. Biden is the safe pair of hands. Biden is the guy we can rely on to beat Trump in November. Are they just watching a different guy on the debate stage to the guy I've been watching, to the guy we've been discussing on the show over the last few months? Have they forgotten the 2016 race, where the Democrats nominated a pro-Iraq war, pro-big business, centrist candidate with a long history of dodgy dealings and dodgy claims, and who, yes, won the black vote in the primaries, but then got destroyed over their support for mass incarceration during the general election and saw depressed levels of black turnout in the election against Trump? Are they really repeating 2016? I mean, isn't the definition of madness doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results? I'm not saying Bernie Sanders doesn't have problems going into an election. He does. But even if you hate Bernie Sanders, why would you think Biden is your savior? The former vice president has a problem not just with gaffes.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing.
But also with straight-up lies.
I came back from South Africa trying to see Nelson Mandela and getting arrested for trying to see him on Robben's Island. He was in prison.
He didn't get arrested in South Africa, for the record, and he's had to walk that back. People say to me, well, the Bernie bros hurt Hillary in 2016 and now they'll hurt Biden. Which is ridiculous. You know who hurt Hillary, apart from Hillary herself, who ran an awful campaign? A ruthless Republican Party machine. Fox News, too, which attacked her from the left on Iraq and on mass incarceration, which hurt her with African Americans. And they'll do all of that again, this time with Biden, a candidate who has all of Hillary's weaknesses and very few of her strengths. You're going to hear a lot more about Hunter Biden and Burisma and Ukraine in the next few months. Ukraine, Burisma, will be Biden's emails. I mean, the Republicans in the Senate have already got going.
If you come run for president and you were in charge of the Ukrainian anti-corruption campaign as vice president and your son sitting on the most corrupt company in the country while you're trying to clean up the country, yeah, that'd come up.
But look, if Bernie Sanders wants to beat Joe Biden and get the nomination for himself, he's going to have to up his game. The entire Bernie strategy was based on upping turnout, especially youth turnout. On Super Tuesday, in most of the states he won and lost, youth turnout wasn't up on 2016. It was down. The youth surge, outside of parts of California perhaps, didn't happen. And in places like Virginia, the increase in turnout benefited Biden, not Bernie. That's a huge problem for the Sanders campaign, which they're going to have to try and fix before the next crucial primary in Michigan next week. And then there's his overall approach to the Democratic Party. Bernie, the insurgent, went after the Democratic establishment by name. And guess what? The Democratic establishment got together and finally hit back hard, with all those big names coming out and endorsing Biden on the eve of Super Tuesday. You can't be surprised that happened. That was always going to happen. So Bernie has to expand his support inside of the party, with ordinary Democrats, with people who aren't his natural supporters, or he can't win. It's that simple. As Ezra Klein of Vox wrote on Wednesday morning, quote, "To win the Democratic primary and govern as a Democratic president, you need to win over Democrats who aren't your natural allies, who didn't start out in your corner. Biden knows that and acts accordingly. the Sanders campaign is going to have to learn the same lesson and fast. End quote. Yeah, really fast. Later in the show, I'll be speaking to Larry Cohen, a former Bernie Sanders campaign advisor who now is chair of the Our Revolution group. But first, joining me to discuss the fallout from Super Tuesday and what Bernie and Biden do now and what happens with Elizabeth Warren is The Intercept's DC bureau chief, Ryan Grimm, a friend of and regular guest on this show. Ryan, thanks for coming back on Deconstructed.
Good to be here, friend.
You caught up on sleep?
I slept this morning. Good. After taking my kids to school.
Good.
Yes, it was nice. I should do that
every
day.
And when you went to sleep, what were you thinking in your head? What was your kind of final thoughts about the night that just went on? How amazed were you by the quote-unquote Biden comeback?
So I was trying to think back to whether there's been a historical period where a swing has happened that quickly and that far. I hesitate to call it organic. You know, the party leadership and the media, you know, kind of push people, but it was not the result of some on the ground organizing effort by Joe Biden or television ads that were being run by Biden's super PAC or by him. So in that sense, it was organic. And I was thinking back to 1988. There have been so many parallels with the 1988 Democratic primary where Jesse Jackson,
was the insurgent.
Was the insurgent and won this caucus in Michigan to become the delegate kind of leader along with Michael Dukakis. And he was polling well ahead in Wisconsin, which was supposed to vote 10 days later. And there was an absolute meltdown in Washington over that 10 days. And we saw that same meltdown happen in the 10 days from Nevada to Super Tuesday.
Although it was really the 72 hours between South Carolina voting and Super
right.
Tuesday.
It was.
You have the momentum after his big win in South Carolina, and then you have this one after another, people pulling out and endorsing him. Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and then good old Beto, and he
right.
won Texas.
It was, but I think it's a mistake to overlook the Democratic Party freakout that happened from Saturday to Saturday, from Nevada to South Carolina, because I think that seeded the ground. Like that paved the way, or that created the ability for things to move so quickly.
Yeah, but to give credit to Biden, it didn't have to move to him. There was also Bloomberg. I mean, it was only a few days ago on this show we were talking about Bloomberg, and the two things that destroyed Bloomberg were, one, Elizabeth Warren in that debate, and two, the fact that Biden won South Carolina big and reminded everyone, I've still got African-American support, I've still got old people support.
Right. No, yes. There's because electability is such a prime, if perhaps unique driver in this primary, that winning begets winning and losing begets losing.
Indeed. And it's funny you mentioned good old electability, which we've discussed so much on the show. In almost all of the states that Biden won on Tuesday, majorities or pluralities of Democratic voters in the states said they support a Medicare for all system in which all private insurance is abolished.
Right.
A complete hardline left-wing Bernie Sanders position, but they didn't vote for Bernie Sanders because they put quote-unquote beating Trump as higher than having a kind of ideological ally in the White House. My problem with that argument is you can hate Bernie Sanders or you can love him and love his positions. I just don't get what calculation people are making in thinking Joe Biden is the electable candidate. I just don't see it. I'd love to be proved wrong, but I don't see it. How is he the safe option?
You know, I think the media has done a similar thing with him that they've done with Donald Trump, which is that they squeeze coherence out of incoherence. If you read the lead of any Washington Post or New York Times story about something that Trump has said about foreign policy or even domestic policy for that matter, it will be written in the classic article format. You know, the Trump, you know, President Trump on Monday said, and it will sound coherent. Like you won't necessarily agree with
his position.
They flatten out
all those huge bumps. And
then you go back and look at the tweet and the video from which they're drawing this article. And you're like, well, no, this is just complete and utter nonsense.
Yeah.
And the media papers that over with Biden. And so it becomes, I think, difficult.
I mean, literally hours before Super Tuesday, he was unable to complete a basic sentence from the Declaration of Independence. People say, oh, he's got a stammer. Okay, but how does the stammer explain the fact that he spent much of February lying about being arrested in South Africa, trying to meet with Nelson Mandela? Things that would disqualify normal candidates in normal election years, but we don't live in a normal political era anymore on either side of the political divide. And therefore, he gets this pass from Democratic voters because they're told and they've come to believe he's the electable person. I just see 2016 happening all over again. Sorry.
Right. and 88 happening all over again. You know, Dukakis was said to be the electable person.
And John Kerry, 2004.
Right, and so everything bottomed out for Jesse Jackson. Dukakis won Wisconsin, and he kind of stumbled into the convention with less than a majority and was given the nomination on the first ballot, which, and I think Bernie Sanders needs to recognize that, that there's no scenario in which Sanders kind of walks into the convention with 40% and then walks out with the nomination, unless that scenario involves other candidates handing him delegates that they've earned. But I don't know if Elizabeth Warren, for instance, has even earned enough to make that possible.
Just, you mentioned Warren, I was going to come to her later, but since you brought her up, by the time people at home hear this chat of ours, Ryan, she may have pulled out of the race. She's having discussions with her team as we speak. Is it fair to say that for Elizabeth Warren, the question now is, does she want to be an insider or an outsider?
I mean, I suppose that she could kind of shed her image of the last 10, 15 years and just go whole hog and endorse the Democratic Party establishment and try to become Treasury Secretary or something under a Biden administration. But A, I think she is...
Joe Biden is not going to make her Treasury Secretary. That won't work for him and his Wall Street friends.
That's A. B, I don't think she thinks that Joe Biden would win the election. So
I think she knows that.
That's fool's gold that you're being offered at that point. But yeah, more importantly is A. Like the party establishment had every opportunity to anoint her as the alternative to Bernie Sanders, as Joe Biden completely bottomed out through January and February. The party establishment chose not to do that. And so, you know, it must be very clear to her that whether she wants to be an insider or not, insiders don't want her to be one.
Yeah. But so you've followed her for years. You've interviewed her many times. You followed her career. You know her pretty well. Gun to your head, if you had to decide, and this might all be resolved by the time people...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
At home here deconstructed this week. Do you think she'll come out and endorse Bernie Sanders?
You know, I'm in a place where I really don't know.
Yeah, same. I have no clue.
It could go either way.
If she does endorse Biden, I think she basically destroys any progressive legacy record that she's built up. Because
I can't imagine that happening. She came into public life, and we reported this on Monday. The Working Families Party, you know, put out a did an on-the-record interview with us, pointing out she came into public life to battle Joe Biden over bankruptcy.
And yet she and Bernie Sanders have not battled Joe Biden over bankruptcy over the last year. As regular listeners of this show know, I've been tearing my hair out that in these debates he gets a pass, partly because there are so many people on the damn stage, but partly because people just won't touch him on obvious weaknesses like the bankruptcy bill, like his relationships with Wall Street, like his relationship with Big Pharma, like his support for mass incarceration. I mean, it gets touched on occasionally. I don't believe the bankruptcy bill was even touched on. And then there's this argument, well, you know, we shouldn't attack each other. What do you think the Republicans and Donald Trump are going to do? They're going to come after him on the bankruptcy bill. They're going to come after him on Iraq. They're going to come after him on mass incarceration. Trump attacked Hillary from the left on super predators in 2016. He attacked Hillary on the left on Goldman Sachs and on the Iraq war. Why would he not do the same thing again? It's the same candidate. Why wouldn't he operate the same playbook?
Of course
he will. And God forbid the same damn result.
Of course he will. And that was Warren's key mistake when Bernie Sanders was down in the polls and in the hospital in Las Vegas recovering from his heart attack. You know, she was in the catbird seat. If she at that moment had taken on Joe Biden directly, gone after him over bankruptcy, over Wall Street, over corruption, etc., all the things that she's been going after him for 20 years on, you could see big elements of the left saying, okay, now there's a fight between the Wall Street wing of the party and progressives, and let's,
they didn't want that
let's
fight
get behind
Sanders
the progressives.
And now Sanders is putting out anti-Biden ads on Social Security. Might be too little too late. And just before we wrap up, let me ask you about that. You know, what Bernie does now going forward. I'm about to speak to Larry Cohen from Our Revolution, former Sanders 2016 advisor. What do they do, the Sanders campaign, about the fact that their entire strategy was built around mobilizing young people, people of color, people who don't normally vote? They did amazingly well with Latinos, especially in California, no doubt about that. But Biden cleaned up with African-Americans again, especially in the southern states on Tuesday and in South Carolina at the weekend. And the youth turnout in places like North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Texas, they were actually down on 2016. How does that fit with the vote for Bernie Sanders? He'll get the young people to come out and start a revolution.
It doesn't. And it's, you know, he has one of those theories of the case that can actually be tested, which is nice. You can, like, you don't have to just take his word for whether or not it's going to work. Now, he still has a chance to make it work. You know, Michigan surprised in 2016. It could surprise again this time. They're going to Washington State, which will have a lot of delegates. Also has coronavirus ripping through it, which raises the question of how you continue to have elections in the midst of a pandemic. But you're right,
and how you support a candidate who doesn't guarantee healthcare for everyone in a country with a pandemic.
Right. So Bernie Sanders either needed to convince suburbanite Democrats that he was the most electable candidate, and that whether or not they wanted political revolution, he was the best shot of beating Trump.
Which he clearly hasn't done.
Which he hasn't done. Or he had to transform the demographics of the party, which he hasn't done yet either. So,
and he's running out of time.
He's running out of time. He's got a couple weeks left to do it.
Ryan, on that note, thank you for joining me after a very long night.
My pleasure.
That was Ryan Grimm, The Intercept's DC bureau chief. And I'm joined now to talk more about the Bernie Sanders campaign specifically and where it goes next after Super Tuesday by Larry Cohen, chair of the pro-Sanders group Our Revolution and a former campaign advisor to Bernie during the 2016 race. Larry Cohen, thanks for joining me on Deconstructed.
Pleasure.
How disappointed are you the morning after not so Super Tuesday for Bernie Sanders?
Well, actually, Bernie hit his marks. The key difference, meaning the percentage of the popular vote that he got in virtually all of those states, particularly the biggest one, California, the number of delegates elected, around 600. The difference is, you know, no one expected two of the other major candidates to drop out, endorse Biden, and create this sense of, you know, we're uniting against Bernie. Which is what I would accuse them of, even if no one else says it that way.
No, clearly they are uniting against Bernie, but isn't that part of politics? Shouldn't the Sanders campaign have expected this would happen? And also, what does it say about your campaign? What does it say about the campaign of Bernie Sanders that they need other candidates in the race to kind of blunt Joe Biden? And once those other candidates go, Biden suddenly pulls off this pretty impressive victory, 10 states to Bernie's 4 states, including Texas, which a lot of us thought this was going to be Sanders' turn to take Texas this time around.
Yeah, well, as we go from Bernie 2016, you know, one candidate edging out another is not really what's important here. What's important is the popular vote, because that shows the mandate. Secondly, the number of delegates elected. So, you know, again, Texas, if we went back 3 or 4 months ago, no one would have expected Bernie to win Texas, and he almost did. So I think, you know, going forward, which is, I think, where you're leading me, is that, yes, we have to figure out how to build the progressive campaign that can win delegates next week, particularly in Michigan and Washington, and then going forward in Illinois, Florida, and, you know, the other key states.
I've had Bernie's surrogates on this show before. I've had Bernie Sanders himself was on the show a few months ago. And of course, the argument always is that we are going to build this coalition to change politics. We're going to get the enthusiasm, the energy. We're going to turn people out. Youth turnout is going to be a huge boost for our campaign. That was the argument. And yet on Super Tuesday and in the first 4 states, young people didn't turn out in the numbers they were supposed to turn out. In fact, in a lot of the states Bernie won and in the ones he lost, there was lower levels of youth turnout on Tuesday than there were in 2016. That's bad, isn't it?
Well, again, you may know those numbers now from yesterday better than I do, but I certainly know from our folks in Austin, you know, people waited in line for hours. In LA, these are young people. In LA, they waited in line for hours. So they were almost all young people in both those cases.
I mean, there's a USA Today piece out that goes through each of the states, South Carolina, North Carolina, Texas, Virginia. The youth share of the electorate was lower in almost all of those states on Super Tuesday 2020 than in Super Tuesday 2016. And I just don't see how that works. If the Sanders campaign is all about juicing turnout, especially young people turnout, that's just not happening. And that's got to be a worry going forward to Michigan and other states.
Absolutely. I mean, a key element in this campaign and for groups like ours, our revolution, is, you know, building with young leaders and young members. And so I think that is a fair benchmark to look at. But I also think it's important to look at the percentage of those young voters that vote for Bernie Sanders compared to Joe Biden. And no matter what happens in these next 3 months, how is the party going to reconstruct itself so that it isn't just, well, we unite to beat Trump, but we unite in a party that now represents these kinds of views and issues, whether it's Bernie or Biden, frankly, that there's got to be a transformational aspect of this, not just a binary, you know, who won the foot race.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the turnout discussion, one of the other criticisms Senator Sanders is facing is, you know, he went after the Democratic establishment, quote unquote. And, you know, the establishment got together and hit back hard in the form of the Monday night endorsements, etc. Does he need to be more of a team player? Does he need to reach out to other Democrats and be nicer to them if he wants to lead them? You advised him in 2016. Can someone with his nature, someone of his age and his background, is he really going to change his style and demeanor now? Does he have to?
Well, I think first of all, it's very important to reach out to Elizabeth Warren. I have total respect for her and her candidacy and her campaign and, more importantly, her life. And yeah, I think it's really important to reach out to her for Bernie, but also for all of us to reach across to our counterparts and to broaden this so that it doesn't look like, you know, the foot race of Bernie versus everybody else. And secondly, to your bigger point, I do think those debates were horrible, the recent ones, and some of that, you know, is because of Bloomberg showing up. But that the frame that we're in, right, has got to be, this is the democratic progressive vision of America that will enable us to beat Trump and transform our lives.
There is this argument that if it's a two-person race, which it now seems to be, and if there's only two people on the debate stage next time round, it'll be a much clearer choice between two competing visions of the future, two candidates and their effectiveness and their ability. I mean, for me, I find it bizarre Joe Biden can't string a sentence together and he gets away with it. In a two-person debate, he might struggle a bit more. But of course, that two-person debate is still a couple of weeks away. It's not going to be before Michigan.
Correct. It's March 15th. It's 2 days before a bunch of other key states, including Illinois, Ohio, Florida, but it's not before Michigan. Michigan is absolutely important, not only number of delegates, but to look and see, you know, can we get a glimpse here of how we do build turnout in Detroit and beat Donald Trump? So I agree with you, but I also agree with you that the debate needs to be sort of a different tone, and on both candidates' parts, and Senator Warren, if she's still in, and be much more constructive rather than destructive. Really debate healthcare, really debate climate crisis, and not throw out ridiculous numbers like Bernie. You want to spend $60 million, that's three times the GDP. Yeah, well, first of all, they're talking about 10 years. They know those numbers are BS, and they do it anyway. So we've got to get this to be an objective discussion of what we're going to do in this nation.
But others would also argue, I mean, there's one school of thought that says Bernie needs to reach out to other Democrats, you know, do addition, not subtraction, as the cliche goes. But on the other hand, there's a lot of us, including me, who would say, go after Biden. He hasn't been vetted. His record. I'm amazed that we've got nearly a year into this race, no discussion of the bankruptcy bill and what he did to kind of screw over working class and middle class Americans. And that's partly because Bernie Sanders actually does kind of pull his punches on the debate stage when it comes to Joe Biden. He always prefaces it with, he's my friend. Oh, yes, we disagreed on Iraq. Some would argue now, actually, he needs to get much tougher on Joe Biden in order to hold him to account, not just for himself, but for the sake of the party, because if Biden's not vetted now, Donald Trump and the Republicans are definitely going to bring up all of his greatest hits.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a difference between, you know, trying to get people on that debate platform to stick to the facts and the issues and say, okay, we disagreed on Iraq. We disagreed on almost every trade bill. We disagree now that, we believe strongly that Medicare for All works. Economically, it's a slam dunk. And we can't distort that, as Donald Trump would do if he was up on this stage. And similarly, Joe Biden is going to give his arguments that, you know, you're talking about a revolution. People want evolution. And Bernie comes back and says, we're talking about a political revolution. We have the worst voting rights of any democracy. We have the money polluting our system. That's the revolution I'm talking about, Joe. So I think it does have to sound more like that, not walk away from the differences, but at the same time, try to make the differences objective.
And if you were advising him again now, as you did in 2016, he went into Super Tuesday as the front runner. He's come out not as the front runner. What one thing would you say he needs to do differently, or does he not need to do anything differently going forward?
That's a very good question. for off the top of my head answer, I would probably say that in that debate on March 15th and in his rallies from between now and then, to really focus in on, I can lead this party. We can do both things. We can beat Donald Trump, and we can create a much happier life for working people in this country.
And if he loses Michigan, which is before the debate, which is the state he won in 2016 against Hillary Clinton, it's where a lot of white working class voters are, which he says he's strongest with, although Joe Biden claims he has those connections too. If he loses Michigan, is it over? Is it done? Finished?
No, I think it's, again, similar to the comment I made about Texas. It's a question of how many delegates. If they basically split it, it's very different than if you have some kind of
lopsided. It's not winner-take-all, indeed.
Yeah, we don't have winner-take-all. Republicans do. And so I think it's much more about that. The key to Michigan is going to be Wayne County. Can we boost the turnout there? And can we get young people, as you said, you know, to have, in fact, turnout in much bigger numbers, black, brown, and white, and show that a different America is really possible, and Michigan's going to help lead the way.
As someone who was involved back in 2016 in terms of the rules on the convention and how a candidate gets nominated, you were intimately involved in that Democratic Party commission in changing the rules, putting the Bernie Sanders' team's view forward in terms of caucuses and primaries and pledged delegates and second rounds and super delegates. We had a big discussion over the last few weeks about Bernie Sanders being the only candidate who said, actually, the candidate who turns up at the convention in Milwaukee with the most number of pledged delegates, even if it's only a plurality, not a majority, should be the candidate. Do you think he'll regret making that pledge, given he may now not be the candidate who turns up with the most pledged delegates? At the moment, it looks like it'll be Joe Biden.
I think that, but I am on the Rules Committee for the convention as well, whether that's a blessing or a curse. But I think that you will see a candidate nominated on one ballot. It's especially clear now. And candidates can drop out, and their delegates are then free to do what they want. That candidate endorses somebody, most of those delegates will go in that direction. So 1991 is the magic number. You know, Biden or Bernie have to hit it. There's not going to be another.
But Bernie won't switch positions, you don't think, and do what he did in 2016, where he started telling superdelegates, actually, doesn't matter if Hillary has a lead, vote for me, I'm the better guy to beat Donald Trump. He will stick to his pledge on the debate stage, which says whoever turns up at the convention with the most delegates is the candidate.
Well, the reason I'm saying this is, You only need 1991 on the first ballot. There's not going to be a second ballot. No. I would tell you the chances of a second. So the non-elected delegates, as I call myself and the other 750, we will not be voting on that nomination. So making a pitch to them is not going to make any difference.
Okay.
It's going to only be the elected delegates. And my opinion is you will see 1,991 or more of them vote for one candidate on the first ballot. And I'm going to do everything I can in these 100 days to make sure that's Bernie Sanders.
Larry Cohen, thanks for joining me on Deconstructed.
Great show. Thank you.
That was Larry Cohen, chair of the pro-Sanders group Our Revolution and a former campaign advisor to Bernie Sanders, making a very strong case for his candidate, saying why he wants Bernie Sanders to win. You may or may not agree with him, but this is a fascinating race to watch nevertheless. And that's our show. Deconstructed is a production of First Look Media and The Intercept. Our producer is Zach Young. The show was mixed by Brian Pugh. Our theme music was composed by Bart Warshaw. Betsy Reed is The Intercept's editor-in-chief. And I'm Mehdi Hassan. You can follow me on Twitter at Mehdi R. Hassan. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to the show so you can hear it every week. Go to theintercept.com/deconstructed to subscribe from your podcast platform of choice, iPhone, Android, whatever. If you're subscribed already, please do leave us a rating or review. It helps new people find the show. And if you want to give us feedback, email us at podcasts@theintercept.com. Thanks so much. See you next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.